Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I am really pleased to say that I have John Galloway. John is a technical evangelist for Microsoft, and I am proud to say a good friend. And John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Long time no talk.
That's right. It was as long ago as yesterday when we talked with Adam Kinney.
Yep.
You are now actually in the DPE group at Microsoft.
That's right. Yeah, we... So you and I were previously coworkers, and we were kind of evangelists, although we didn't like to call ourselves that. And we were shuttled around a bunch of different organizations, and the organization and they kind of got evangelism, but kind of not. And so this seems like a good fit for me here. I'm still focusing on ASP.NET as it relates to Azure, but really just focusing on ASP.NET, which is kind of cool.
That's great. And I should say DPE stands for Developer Platform Evangelism, which is the official evangelist group in Microsoft.
Yeah.
So now you get to be a real evangelist.
That's right. Yeah. And so they've got, people are familiar with Channel 9. Channel 9 is part of DPE. There's, a bunch of the kind of public facing parts of Microsoft developer stuff, including also, a lot of the conferences and public events are run by DPE. And there's DPE corporate, which is, at Redmond, and then there's DPE field. So if you go to a local event or your local kind of Microsoft guy or gal, they're probably DPE and they're field DPE. So there's all this kind of stuff. And it's weird for me because I'm corporate DPE working remote from San Diego. So I don't fit into any box yet again.
Yet again. I was going to say, when did you ever? Okay. So you're working on on ASP.NET. And there's a whole lot of new stuff that comes under the umbrella of ASP.NET. Can you take us through briefly what some of the most recent releases are?
We've got a pile of things that all released at once. There was Visual Studio 2012, and that has a lot of web developer features. So including things like, incredible JavaScript editing and syntax highlighting and all that kind of stuff. So it's actually compiling the JavaScript as you type it. So you can, define a function and then a few lines later start, using that function and the IntelliSense all works for it, which is pretty slick. There's also, CSS and HTML editor features, just a lot of really neat things that just kind of, it just kind of works really smoothly. So that's really nice. Then there was .NET Framework 4.5 release, and that includes ASP.NET 4.5 web forms. So I always, get them backwards. If it's ASP.NET 4.5 web forms or ASP.NET web forms 4.5. So I try and alternate. And so one of those is going to be right. Some things I really like with web forms 4.5, for one thing, is they've got a much better data story, I think. So there's two parts of that, both of which kind of come over from MVC. And one of those is you've got strongly typed data controls. So instead of a bunch of bind statements that are kind of sprinkled through your data controls that say bind on this, and then you give it a string. And if you spell that wrong, nobody's going to complain until you actually view the page. So now what you can do is you can define an item type. And then throughout the control, you can say, you do the less than percent number sign, and then you do item dot, and it'll autocomplete. And so it's strongly typed. So if you autocomplete to a string field, you get string IntelliSense on it. But more importantly, it actually, it'll show you compile errors if you type one wrong. So I think that's really nice. And then on the flip side of that, back in your code behind, you deal with things a lot more like you would in MVC. So you can, let me back up. So in your methods, say for instance, you've got a list view or a form view, then you define on that methods that say select command and update command and insert command. And so instead of those mapping to a control, like a data source control, they map to methods. So then your control has a select command, and your select command returns data to it. So this is very similar to the MVC model, except it's scoped at the control level, not at the view controller level.
Now that's twice you said it's similar to MVC, but what you're talking about is ASP.NET essentially without MVC is incorporating these features.
Yeah, this is web forms. So what happened here, the PM for Web Forms, Damian Edwards, was previously, and I'm not sure if he still is, but he was one of the guys that started up the Web Forms MVP project, which is Model View Presenter. And the idea was trying to bring kind of the same pattern focus that brings some organization and structure into MVC applications. So bringing that over into Web Forms. And so with this release, since then, you know, Damian's been at Microsoft 2 years or so, and he helped, you know, bring a lot of these features into the core of Web Forms.
And if you're a Web Forms programmer, I guess two questions come up. The first is, are you making this hard for me? I'm used to Web Forms. I've been doing it for a while. Are you suddenly complicating my life? And the second question is, if you're bringing so much of MVC in, why don't I just shift over to MVC? So take either of those questions.
Yeah, I'll take them both. Okay, so first of all, it doesn't complicate or break anything that you already had working. These are new optional features you can take advantage of. So, you know, if you've got your existing, you know, way that you're dealing with data aware controls and all the, you know, stuff on the back end to populate and get information in and out of those controls, that all still works. But a better way to think of this is it's like a better object data source. So there have been things over the years, ways that you could deal with data in Web Forms. And they all kind of had, you know, they were easy to drag and drop onto a form. And then eventually you hit some problems. And so, you know, the simple SQL data source is fine, but then you've got SQL littered throughout and it's not maintainable at all. Then there's object, there's probably some others along the way. There's object data source, which says, okay, you know, get your data, deal with your data through my object. But the object had a lot of limitations to it and was sometimes difficult to work with. And it's kind of a weird abstraction to, you know, you've got your page and your object data source and you're bouncing back and forth. So what they've got with this new one is it's very similar to an object data source, but you've got commands inside your page that select, update, delete, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, simple answer to the question, the first question is no, this doesn't, you know, ruin your life if you're already doing Web Forms. But then the next one is, well, if I'm writing code that looks like MVC, why not write MVC code? And I gave a presentation last week at that conference, and it's called that conference. So my presentation was on integrating Web Forms and MVC in the same application. So the kind of hybrid app idea. And a common scenario for this is if you've got, you know, a legacy Web Forms application that's got a lot of good working code that depends on controls, you're not just going to scrap and rewrite it, but you'd like to start using MVC, you know, maybe to get better control over your HTML that you're outputting, take advantage of, you know, some modern features, or, you know, just the pattern is, to me, I think the pattern's easier to manage in a software application. So if you'd like to start integrating the two, what I recommended in my talk was step one is get on WebForms 4.5 and you can start working with, you know, this way of dealing with data with, you know, strongly type control on the front end and then commands, methods. So, you know, mapping controls to methods. And then those methods can be using the same model classes under the hood as MVC controllers. So that's really powerful in the same application that's got MVC and Web Forms. Under the hood, you've got the same model objects, and you can use the same services, and you can use the same validation. So within Web Forms, you can call try update model, and it'll perform the same validation that MVC will. So I think that's a very compelling example. Another is, you know, for a lot of groups, jumping from Web Forms to MVC is a big conceptual leap. You're changing a lot of things at once. And if you've got a team that's working with Web Forms, it's a much smaller requirement to say, hey, let's start using, you know, this strongly typed models and model binding in a Web Forms app, you know, just in this control, instead of setting a bunch of properties manually in code, I'm calling into a method. So, you know, it's a lot more gradual and incremental.
Yes.
And if you get very comfortable with it, it's a lot easier to make that leap then over to MVC.
So let's talk about MVC. Are there new things in MVC as well?
Yeah. So there are some things. I think I may have mentioned them. I was on a while ago and we were talking about what was on in MVC. So a lot of those things are still there. Things like adaptive rendering. So if you bring up a new MVC application and you run it, you get a newer, you know, a better looking web page than you did in MVC 3 and earlier. But what's nice is when you resize that down to a smaller display size, something that would fit on a mobile screen, it automatically reconfigures and, you know, it's a smart resize. And it's taking advantage of CSS media queries to do that. So that's just built into the default HTML and CSS. And by the way, kind of, you know, way towards the end, right before the final release, they added that also into web forms. So file, new project, and a web forms app looks the same and has that same adaptive rendering.
That's cool.
It is cool. Yeah. And there are a bunch of other more advanced mobile features that you can use. So you can create websites that work well on mobile applications. There's one option is display modes. And so with that, you can create separate views that are only displayed to mobile users. So what that means is you would create, you know, you've got your web page, you've got a controller and you've got a view, and it works great on a desktop. And then you say, I'd like to make a mobile version of this view that maybe strips out some, you know, objects and reconfigures things and just looks better on a mobile app. And it's more complex than just some CSS. So then you would create index.mobile.cshtml. And just by having that .mobile in the name, it's automatically going to be shown to mobile clients. And then one other thing they've got is support for jQuery mobile. So there's a whole project template. You can create an entire web application just using jQuery mobile.
And you have a book on MVC coming out, a new rev of your book.
Yeah, I do. So we just finished up updates on that. And you are much more of a book author than I am, but I'm sure you're aware of, you know, late breaking changes in the subject of your book towards the end keeps you very busy.
Ouch.
And so so some of these changes kept me very busy until, you know, quite recently. So just sent off the latest revisions of the book, and it's due out in October.
And it's called
Professional ASP.NET MVC 4.
And it's,
we may have dropped the professional part of it.
And who's the publisher?
It's Rocks. It's on Rocks.
Okay.
You know, one other thing that reminded me of, the reason that we were quite busy, you know, between the release candidate and RTM was that they added OAuth support. So both web forms and MVC, you can log into an application using Google, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. So that's really nice. You don't, if you would like in your application, you don't have to, create an account, register, log in, all that. You can just click to log in with Twitter or Google, OpenID and OpenAuth clients. So they did that by integrating .NET OpenAuth library and then kind of wiring that up throughout the account controller stuff or the membership layers. So
I want to stay with the books for a second before I come back to asking you a question about ASP.NET programming. But your just to be clear, your book is being published by Rocks, and I have shanghaied you into co-authoring with me my second book on Windows 8, which we're going to call, I believe, Programming Windows 8 with C# and XAML. And it says a lot about you, John, that you are an ASP.NET guy who knows as much about programming Windows 8 with XAML as anybody else I know. And it's going to be a very interesting and exciting adventure writing that book together.
Yeah, I'm excited for the opportunity kind of to broaden out. You know, I've been playing a lot with Windows 8 applications on my own, just having fun building them. And a lot of it, you know, we've both done a good amount of Silverlight and WPF, and it's nice to be able to immediately apply that in a Windows 8 app and run it. And it's like, whoa, I just built a Windows 8 app.
Yes, so. I talked for some at a presentation I did recently about that I had a lot of trouble getting started with Windows 8 apps. And what finally broke through was I said, okay, I'm not going to write a Windows 8 app. I'm going to write a Windows Phone app in, you know, the Windows 8 template and just see how much of it works. And suddenly I'm writing Windows 8 applications because there was very little that I had to do in terms of mind shift or even in terms of syntax to be able to build that application.
I had the same experience. I was working on something. I was frustrated that the whatever it's called now, the modern desktop, doesn't have a clock tile. And there's all kinds of technical reasons why you shouldn't write a clock tile, but I wanted one. So I wrote one, and it doesn't stay up to date all the time, but it's close enough. And along the way doing that, I was kind of fighting with things. And finally I said, how would I do this if it was just XAML, if it was just straight up, you know, a Silverlight or WPF app? And it all worked. And so a lot of the, like, I was making it a lot harder than I needed to.
So that brings me to the more overarching question that I want to ask you. And this also comes in two parts, but I won't make the mistake again of asking two questions at once. It's always unfair. But the first part of it is ASP.NET programmers, whether they're web page programmers or they're MVC programmers, that's one group of people. And then there's a group of people who are HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript programmers. And are those overlapping communities or disjoint communities, or what's the relationship between those two?
I believe that in a lot of cases, they're in different, you know, types of development, they're seen as different people. But I think especially in the MVC world, they are an overlapping skill set. And the reason is because in MVC, your views are whatever HTML you write. And MVC also, because you're not using controls, there's a lot more of an emphasis on Ajax and JavaScript interaction. So for instance, if you wanted a grid or you want to, you know, do some filtering, usually in MVC, you're going to do that using JavaScript, you know, maybe jQuery or, you know, a popular library. You're definitely be calling services back to the server. At least in that world, I find that a lot of MVC developers really get into, you know, HTML, JavaScript, CSS. It's definitely kind of a passion of mine, which is probably why I've kind of, you know, drifted into this area of development, that I'm really focused on MVC.
So then let me understand, is it that ASP.NET programmers or MVC programmers also become very interested in HTML5, CSS, JavaScript, or is it the other way around? Or help me understand the relationship between those two sets of things.
Yeah, well, I mean, people take different paths, different ways, you know. I've found that I actually started as a desktop app developer doing Visual Basic a long time ago. And then I wanted to build a website. And my friend said, hey, you can use your VB to write an ASP.NET app. And over the years, I kept writing, focusing on the server. So I was really focused on, you know, SQL Server and performance tuning and, you know, how best to build out my server side stuff. And, you know, as I was doing that again with ASP.NET, you know, 1.0, 1.1, 2.0, working my way through those. And over time, I found that it was important for me to focus on what the client actually sees. So, you know, writing great, pure, well-crafted server-side code doesn't really impact my user in the slightest. As long as the site stays up and performs well, they don't care what the server-side code is in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I gave a presentation at NDC Oslo earlier this summer where I spoke about learning to love HTML as beautiful code. And so, you know, that kind of focus of let's not treat HTML as like some byproduct of our beautiful server-side code, but instead let's think about it as the only interaction we have with our customers. And so, you know, in working on a website, it's important to care about and craft that interaction.
Okay.
So I just feel it's a natural progression, and it's something I generally see in web developers, you know, whether they come into it from, you know, there are a lot of people that are server or that are client side focused and do HTML, JavaScript, CSS, and then later say, well, I need some server interaction going on, and they move into the server. So those people are always very focused on the HTML side of it. And then on the people that start on the server and are kind of more, you know, traditional programmers that kind of need to do some web stuff, I see them starting, you know, focusing more on crafting their server-side code. But over time, a lot of them start realizing, hey, I need to get good at this HTML and I need to get good at this, you know, JavaScript, CSS stuff, because, you know, I've got all this goodness on the server and I'm having trouble communicating it.
Okay, that helped a lot. Let me ask you the second part of the question then, which is, if you are an MVC programmer and you're also using HTML5 and JavaScript and CSS3, I wish there was a word for those three together. That's a term we need to coin. Because they seem to go together. But if that's where you're working, how big a leap is it to take those skills over to Windows 8 programming?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting, you know, discussion. On the one side is, if you're really focused on the design and the UI of the page or of the app, then Adam, I think, convinced me yesterday on when we talked to him that, you know, having CSS for style alone is a huge advantage in building a Windows 8 app. However, there are some things, if you want to take advantage of C# skills, and there is a good amount of code that you're going to be working with, potentially like, you know, NuGet packages that you're used to and that sort of thing. And for that case, that would steer me towards C# and XAML. So I guess really, I think it's nice to kind of have a foot in both worlds.
But if you're purely an MVC programmer and you're focused on server side, then the Win8 skills are disjoint. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. I mean, the C# application development skills still feel similar. There are differences, you know, it's not a response request type of model. It's an application that sits around for a while. But building an app in C# feels pretty naturally to me. And then XAML does take some time to get used to. I happen to have, you know, put enough time into being slightly dangerous with it. But the tools that are that are available in Visual Studio and also Blend are good enough that you can, you know, you can do a fair amount there.
Okay, before we move on, let me ask you about learning curve. If I am a XAML programmer and I decide, you know, I've been listening to John and it just sounds like really cool stuff going on with MVC and building web applications, and I really would like to be able to do that, what kind of learning curve am I looking at to start from either from scratch or from having used ASP.NET a couple years ago?
Okay, if you're starting from scratch, the biggest learning curve that you have to deal with is that it's a different application model. It's very easy to get comfortable with when you're building a desktop app that you don't have to deal with, you know, the session state that the application is start up, it runs for a while, and then it goes away. And when it goes away, it's just done. But it may be running for 6 hours while your user, you know, cranks away at it. With web applications, the app spins up and then you've got response request, and those are, you know, those come up, process a request and go away, but the app keeps running. There's just, you know, some differences in the application state and, you know, the life cycle. Kind of like, you know, when we moved into building Windows Phone and now Windows 8 apps, that, you know, it can be suspended or, you know, yes. Like that kind of thing. So I think that is the biggest part of the learning curve. As far as, you know, getting started, I do think that one real nice thing about web development is it's very immediate. It's very interactive. So that you can go through a tutorial, view a page, and, you know, I mean, you can do file, new project, new MVC site, and hit F5 and it works, you know, and you can click around on it and then you can try and break it, you know, and so you can fiddle with it pretty easily. So I do think that the interactive aspect of the web is nice for learning, as opposed to, you know, when you're building an application, there's a little bit more work to that.
Okay. There is some technologies that a single book can get you started, but cannot really cover comprehensively. And then there are other technologies that, no, if you read a substantial book, you can really get the working knowledge of that technology. Where does MVC fit in there?
Well, I think that you can be pretty productive, you know, reading a book or even going through some tutorials. We've got a lot of tutorials on the ASP.NET website that you can go through some tutorials and you can learn. I've got people that, you know, on the support forums, they'll go through, they'll ask some questions, and then I won't hear from them. And then 2 months later, they'll post something on the discussion. Hey, I deployed my first site based on this tutorial. You know, or
you don't have this book author thing down, John. You're supposed to be talking about how you really need a book to do this.
You know, the book is definitely helpful because you get the context, right? So you can get the you know, tutorial, and they really kind of have built it so that you can get a lot done. But then you know how it is when you hit the trouble spots. That's where a book comes in handy. It's where you want to say, well, how do I more deeply understand this? Or how can I make sure I'm not opening security holes or that kind of thing?
Good save. Okay, I'm going to change directions on you. You are in the Azure group. I know you're not an Azure evangelist. You're an ASP.NET evangelist. But can you explain to me briefly about Azure, who the target audience is, why I would use Azure, and what the basic pieces are?
Yeah, well, so first of all, Azure and Azure evangelism is by itself a little bit interesting because, as you know, when Scott Guthrie moved into the Azure org, he brought with him ASP.NET, IIS, Entity Framework, which was recently open source. That's kind of cool. But a lot of, WCF is another one. So all these kind of server side technologies are now kind of moved under this Azure roof. And so I am in a team, the Windows Azure Evangelism team. My main focus is on ASP.NET, but the idea is that if people are building apps with ASP.NET, they'll want to deploy them, and Azure is a good place to deploy them. So what is Azure? That's a question that's confused me over the previous years. Because it started off with this whole kind of, I believe it's called a platform as a service, PaaS. So the idea is that you built things using development tools and libraries, and you built an Azure application. And then you deployed it out using, web roles and worker roles and things like that. And your application was managed by Azure. So kind of in the same way that, when you build a Windows Phone app, or a Windows 8 app, it's the life cycle of your app that, a lot of things about your app kind of live inside of this other environment. And that works really well in some circumstances, but it is not a direct fit for people who are, I just built an MVC app and I'd like to deploy it kind of thing. So they've added some things over time, which is infrastructure as a service, IaaS, which includes things like virtual machines. So you can, build a VM, could be even like a Linux VM. You upload it and it'll run in Azure. And then one of the really interesting things that they just recently announced, this was back in June, was it was the week before TechEd US, I believe. They announced Windows Azure Websites. And the idea with Windows Azure Websites, it's kind of a mix of both of these, really, platform and infrastructure as a service. The idea is that you can spin up a website. So you go to windowsazure.com, you sign up for an account, which takes, 5 minutes. You do have to put in a credit card, but you can set a spending limit of zero. So you can say, I don't want to spend any money, never charge my credit card. And so you create an account, then you go into this portal and you say, create a new website. You type in the name of the website, you hit a button, and like 5 seconds later, it's running. So then you have hosting. It's essentially a shared hosting account. And you can, they have connection information, so you can FTP to it. You can download a publish profile for it, which is just an XML file. And then inside of Visual Studio, in my new, in my MVC application, I say, I right click on the project and say publish. And then it says, what's your, publish information? I say, import that XML file. And I click the publish button and it's deployed. So it's a free for up to 10 sites, for shared hosting. So, and, literally, so I just did I was on Cloud Cover Show and I just blogged about this, where I walk through building an MVC site and deploying to Azure in, a couple of minutes.
Well, why wouldn't I host my blog site on there?
I don't know.
Well, then let's talk about that for a second. I have a blog and it's sitting on a site that hosts blogs, that hosts, WordPress blogs, and they charge so much per month. I happen to think they're terrific. It's Media Temple and they do a great job and they have great support. So I don't in any way want to undercut them. But are you saying that I could take my entire WordPress blog over to Azure and drop it in there and have it hosted for free?
Well, so yes, I mean, there are some more steps along the way, but one thing that's cool with Windows Azure Websites is inside that portal. Remember when I was saying you could create a new website, click here and fill in the name. You can also say, create one from a template. So you can say, create a new WordPress site, create a new, Umbraco site or, Orchard or whatever. And it will create and configure a running WordPress site for you. And that's, it's using, PHP and MySQL. So you can very easily create a new WordPress site. Now for you, I would recommend probably that you would, if you're going to do this, you would go into your existing WordPress site, export, so you can export your site as a WordPress, whatever. It's an archive of your site, right? So you'd export it and you go into this other site and import it. And then you'd need to make sure that wherever your images are hosted, if your images are hosted on your machine, you'd have to copy them over. Now, the one thing that you'd also need to do is you need to deal with the domain. And these free websites are hosted. I believe it's, you know, like, you know, whatever domain name or, you know, site name dot Windows Azure. What is it? Windows Azure websites. I forget what the name is. Okay. .net. So, but basically it's a subdomain of that. If you want to get an actual domain name, so, you know, still be jesseliberty.com.
Yes.
Then you need to upgrade to a reserved instance and you pay a bit more for that. So you do have to, you know, upgrade. At that point, it's no longer free if you want to call it, you know, jesseliberty.com.
And I keep a lot of files on my site for people to be able to download samples and media and so on. Is that part of Azure as well?
Yeah. So you could, you know, very simply, like you could FTP them up to your site. Mm-hmm. You can... if you want, you can change from what I was talking about, Windows Azure websites, that's a shared instance. You can change that over to reserved if you want more capacity. And they have all kinds of other, you know, more advanced file hosting options, like, for instance, a blob. They have blob storage, blob standing for binary large object. But the idea is it's a file storage mechanism. So if you're hosting, you know, like a lot of video or, you know, large files or that kind of thing, it's kind of a more advanced way of doing that. But for simple, if you're uploading zip file of some code and you could just FTP or upload it through WordPress or however you want it and people could download it.
Okay. So let me try to nail down a bit of a difference here though. Is Azure just a competitor to Media Temple and ASP Host and all these other hosting sites, or does it go beyond what they have to offer?
It's different. So all these, you know, like say any of these discount ASP or whatever, mm-hmm. these are places where you get, you can upload some code to and they'll run it for you. But you don't have any kind of more advanced control of the server. For instance, let's say, we had this ASP conference this summer and it was a combination of, you know, there were some Microsoft presentations from Channel 9 Studios. And then there were also a bunch of volunteer, community people that wanted to give sessions and they gave those too. And so we were running on Azure on a shared instance, you know, the cheapy one. The day of the conference, actually the night before, we scaled that up to two or three medium servers. So they were dedicated servers and we had three instances running. So during the conference, we had, you know, three servers. And then when it was done, we went, you know, logged back into the Azure Management Portal thing, dialed that slider back down from 3 to 1, and we had just scaled up and down. So the idea that you kind of have a little bit more control over your infrastructure when you want it.
Yes.
And then another thing is that Azure has all these kind of base cloud services. So there are all these things, like I mentioned, you know, that blob storage, but there's also, you know, very advanced. You can have an entire SQL farm with, you know, replication going on. There's a lot of other kind of cloud services that they offer. So you can, you know, start with something like an Azure website, which is, you know, very simple, might as well be shared hosting. And then you can turn on other things like, you know, SQL reporting or Active Directory or all these other kind of, you know, more advanced services. They even have support for things like Hadoop, which is used for, you know, processing large data, you know, just all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So I guess the idea is that it scales up quite a bit.
Yes, and that's what separates it from these hosting services, mm-hmm. is that it is essentially, it's as if you had a data center, but you're doing that on a share in the cloud basis.
Yeah, I think the huge sale of it, the important thing of cloud services is that you have a slider and it says, today I would like this much capacity. And so, you know, I've heard some examples recently of people doing things like, you know, a disaster management system for, you know, a local, you know, municipality, right? And so most of the time, if there's not a disaster, they need tiny amount of store, you know, capacity. Mm-hmm. But then if, you know, there is a disaster, they need a lot and they want the site to be incredibly responsive and they want, you know, backup and failover. So they go in and they drag that slider up. And so that's what I think cloud services offer. It's Azure or, you know, just cloud hosting in general, the ability to scale up with a, you know, very easily.